This is Your Say Torbay, and we are Torbay's Youth Parliament, and we are broadcasting for the very first time on our live panel show, which is hosted on Parkfield Extreme Radio. We've got Freddie and Nell here as our presenters, and our panel consists of Gordon Oliver, Torbay's Mayor, Kevin Foster, the Conservative candidate for Torbay, Sue Maddock, who's our Labour candidate for Torbay, and Bob Owers, who is the head at Churston Grammar School, which is where we are broadcasting this from. We've picked three key issues around mental health, jobs and curriculum for life, and we will be playing out some Vox Pops throughout the show where we've asked a range of young people on their views on these topics. Here's our first Vox Pop on jobs.
Do you feel Torbay provides enough job opportunities for you in the future, and why?
No, because you can't really find them around here, so I don't know where to look.
No, because I feel that most of the jobs around Torbay are very low-cost jobs, like working in a hotel, things like that. If, for people to have the opportunity to earn more decent salaries, I think they've got to leave the area, and therefore they come back when they're older, and that's why I think there's a lot of older people around here.
In some ways they do, because some of the jobs are actually things that Torbay and England needs. So yeah, I think they do actually give you some really good jobs.
I find the fact that if I want to get a high-skilled, highly paid job, I feel that many of the job opportunities in Torbay for those sort of jobs are really rather small and actually almost non-existent. I feel that perhaps if you want the more educated people to stay, then you must offer more opportunities for those higher-skilled jobs.
Yes, because it was easy for me to get a job.
I don't think so, I'm not entirely sure, but it's a very small community, so I don't entirely know, I'm not entirely sure that there are a lot of opportunities to, for like, jobs and stuff like that.
No, I don't, because when you're at school, they say about apprenticeships and college and that, but when you're in college and on apprenticeships, you don't really know about where to go after. All you know about is like university, and you have to do your own research and get in contact with your own people, and that could take up to like weeks or months. So yeah,
I think Torbay does provide enough job opportunities for young people, especially part-time jobs. But for the future, when we want a well-paid career, I feel this, with the only small fishing industry and the tourism, we have to go further afield in order to get those higher-paid jobs, which we all desire.
So in terms of young people, I would say that obviously Torbay is quite a tourist area, isn't it? So there are, you know, jobs out in the hotels and in the leisure industry locally, but obviously everywhere may have issues for young people around working. But there are Career Southwest and other places like that provide opportunities for young people to get into work, education and training. I think volunteering is a really good way in as well, isn't it, to gain the skills, to kind of to get work experience skills for future employees and get a reference. So there are ways and means, even when things are a bit difficult in terms of the job market.
Yeah, but it just gives loads of little kids and others the opportunity to do what they want to do.
So those were some Vox Pops. Are there any questions from the audience?
I think maybe it'd be a good place to start just responding to some of those things. So, Gordon, would you like to...
Yes, thank you very much indeed. The number of jobs that will be created in the next 3 to 4 years is very, very good. Yesterday I went to the Devon Studio School, which is a new development of 300 training programmes for working with South Devon College and the Health Service for new jobs in the Health Service. So a wonderful opportunity for 14 to 19-year-olds. The pharmaceutical manufacturing unit on the Ring Road has just opened. That protects high-quality jobs and encourages another 50, maybe 60 new jobs. And we've just won the bid for an £8 million electronics and photonics unit for Torbay, which will be a cluster for high-tech industries. We have a high-tech forum with 70-odd members, manufacturers forum, export forum, and a small office in the United States for inward investment and export. So with the rate of unemployment low at the moment, the growth, I think, is good. You've got 1,000 at South Devon College, 1,000 apprenticeships, which can lead to university education. So the prospects for future, I think, for youth in Torbay and jobs is very good.
Okay. Any other responses to that, Boxpot?
Yeah, I'll give a response.
Two levels, really. I think for young people of school age who aren't looking to enter the job market full time, I think there are quite a lot of opportunities, and certainly there are lots of students at Churston who go out, they find a part-time job, and the feedback we get is actually they're really highly valued members of the workplace, so there are opportunities for part-time jobs. The bigger concern would be that most of our students go away to be educated and they're not drawn back by high-quality, high-paid jobs. So it's a real shame, I think, that many of our students aren't able to come back to this area to have a high-skilled, high-paid job. One of the issues to address, I think, is infrastructure. It's nice to note that it is being addressed. I think there's a potential for perhaps some high-tech, high-paid businesses to relocate into Torbay. It'd be nice to see if there were some incentives from Torbay Council for them to do that. And if we do get that, it might draw some of our young people back. It's a real shame that our best talent from this area disappears off to university and very rarely comes back. And that's the thing I'd like to see change.
I think things are looking up in Torbay. It's also true that unemployment is low, but the jobs that are being created are usually low-waged, low-skilled, and so it's not surprising that those of you who are able to get away and go to university don't return. Now, most people who go to university don't necessarily go back to where they came from, but it's always good if a few people, or young people, we need more young people to come back to Torbay to work in areas, not to come and work in existing firms. We definitely need to lift and attract the skills base in Torbay and to increase what's called productivity, because at the moment there are loads and loads of small businesses that really aren't really growing and don't make much money, and younger people in general across the country are the people who drive a lot of energy when they become young entrepreneurs. But to do that, they've got to be encouraged, and as politicians we've got to encourage you and other young entrepreneurs a lot more to do all sorts of things that you can do. The problem is that we do have perhaps those people who stay behind do get a bit demoralised, and actually those young people really need much more of our support in Torbay.
Okay, do you want to?
Yeah, I think one of the figures I was having in the back of my mind is that I think 25% of people in work in the Bay don't actually earn a living wage, which is the amount between the amount higher than the minimum wage that's seen as what you need to have to be able to pay all your basic bills and then have some disposable income. I think touching on certainly sorting out our infrastructure is absolutely vital. We've seen the major investment in the new bypass come. We've seen the commitments around the A303 and A358 route, which will help make it easier to come into the Bay, and because of giving us better access to our markets in the southeast and around London, but also, of course, sorting out our rail infrastructure, most of which dates from the Victorian era with the changes that were made at the end of by the Beeching Report back in the 1960s attached to them. We can even look at, you know, the fact that this part of the Bay has no rail service at all since 1964, I think. So there is a need to sort out our infrastructure. There is a need to, again, to provide some incentive and some support to high-tech businesses that invest. Thankfully, some of that's come through the Regional Growth Fund. I know Gordon did it with the Mayor's Growth Fund as well, to give a high-tech, high-skill here. And also, not just those who go away to university, but also looking to develop some of the opportunities for technical training via apprenticeships, which, again, bring a lot of skills into the marketplace, give people an alternative to university, if that's appropriate for them, and, of course, create employment. But there are organisations that could look to relocate to the Bay, but they will not do that unless we have the infrastructure, both physical in road and rail and digital in terms of broadband, that allow them to flourish. That is the one thing we do need to tackle over the next 5 to 10 years.
So I think one question that we've had previously would be how are the people in charge, our decision makers, able to improve the uptake of apprenticeships in the Bay, and how can we just tell us how can we get involved in these schemes?
Well, perhaps if I kick off first. One of the things we've done, Sam, is later this year the minimum wage for apprenticeships is going to go up 20%, because at the moment I think it's at £3.50, which isn't a huge incentive to anyone. And also, again, putting government funding and government support behind it to go into apprenticeships. There is a lot of funding that goes into higher education. Traditionally, there's not quite so much that's in support that's gone into allowing people to go through further education who aren't looking to go on to a university degree. And I think for me, those are important. And actually, if you look at the key skills shortages in this country, more of them relate to items that will be covered by an apprenticeship than those that will be covered by a degree.
Yes, I mean, it's actually a very good question because we spend a lot of time talking about policies. I mean, the Labour Party has actually committed to ensuring a much higher level of quality for apprenticeships and promising apprenticeships for all of those who have the basic qualifications and who want them. But the question is a good one because it's about actually putting those things into practice. At the moment, far too many apprenticeships are basically often cheap labour. They've improved. It makes a lot of difference, the quality of places like South Devon College, which is a good college, in actually ensuring that the apprenticeship system that they set up is both ensuring training and also good work experience. And one of the things, I've worked in higher education in a business school for the last 20 years, and actually higher education in the past has been very weak at developing the right sort of relationships and spending enough time in working out how to have good relationships between what are work employers and training the training side or the education side. And so when people say that they're going to invest in what goes for more, when they say they're going to just invest in training, that's not the whole story. It actually makes a lot of difference in terms of the quality of the relationships and some money going into what they call a third arm of higher education, which is called external relationships. And Plymouth University, in fact, has been very good at this, unlike a lot of other universities. And when you go to university, those sorts of things are sort of a bit irrelevant, but actually later on they're quite important. And particularly locally, I think it's good that the South Devon College is developing, has got some good provision, but there's some areas where it's still very weak. I think the other thing that's quite important is particularly in relation to those skills that are higher level skills that we really need, particularly in engineering, innovation, are not advertised enough, particularly to girls. The world could be your oyster, actually, if you're a girl and want to go into any sort of engineering. You can have very, very interesting work, but you have to pursue it as something you really want to do, because it's quite difficult to, if you wait for other people to come along and tell you exactly how to go about things, you're going to find it hard. But if you just pursue what you really want to do, there will be people out there to help you. And actually, it's just as problematic when you've graduated, actually. I know that doesn't make you feel any better, but it's just as much of a sort of confusing situation when you're a graduate looking for where you can go and how you can get upskilled. Usually just having a degree now isn't quite enough, and gaining work experience is really important. And sometimes looking at the quality of those higher education institutions in terms of what they've got to offer, in terms of that sort of support, is quite important.
Can I just spice that up a bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got about a minute. So
okay, just a minute. One thing I think would be really helpful if the political parties stop using education, apprenticeships, training as a political football. We had a diploma programme, cost billions of pounds. When the Conservative government came in, they ditched it. It cost £58,000 per student for everybody who completed a diploma. Complete waste of money. I now notice that if the Labour get in, they're going to ditch the current GCSE reforms and introduce something else. Can we have cross-party agreement on what is good educational provision for young people, not what's good party politics? Invest the money in something that's long-term so that we don't ditch programmes that we spent huge amounts of time investing money and resources in, and then the new party gets in and ditches it for something else. And it will happen again if we have a change of party. How about some agreement so that young people get some long-term planning for their future? That's what I'd request.
I completely agree with that.
Could I come back on a couple of add a couple of points?
We can have 30 seconds. It'd be good.
Okay, we have now Plymouth University in Brixham. We work very closely with Exeter University as well, so we can keep a lot of talent here. Research was undertaken with you as youngsters said that the vast majority of you want to be in your own businesses. So we need to look at jobs, and I'm optimistic about the future of jobs in Torbay, but small businesses is where the growth will be, and that's where you want to be, and we have to address that.
Great, great. So our second topic is mental health, so I'll just pass it over to Nell, who will introduce our next topic.
A topic which mainly affects young people is mental health. The impact from social media, stress from exams, relationships with jobs, are all problems that young people have to face. Support needs to be given to these young people to prevent the consequences of mental health issues. I think we've got Box Pox, where we ask young people how do they deal with stress.
I usually walk away when I'm stressed and count to 10.
I find it very hard to deal with stress, and I find that unless I set certain times for the work and exercise I need to do, I find that I don't do it, and in not doing it I feel even more stressed than I feel than having to do it.
Well, I tend to try to compartmentalise what I'm stressing about so I'm not blowing it out of proportion and get down to really why I'm stressing it, and then try to deal with the problem head on.
I cope with stress by actually talking to people about what makes me stressed and expressing the ways that they've dealt with stress as well, and just sharing your ideas, because the problem shared is it just halves the problem for yourself. That's how I deal with it anyway.
Okay, those were those... Well, Vox Pops on stress. I hope you enjoyed them. Are there any questions from the floor?
I've read many articles about people researching into the times at which children are best at calculating problems and things like that. And they've said that mostly people function, like their brain functions better towards about 10 o'clock in the day. So why would there still be school and exams and things that happen way before then, when we know that children can't function to their best at that time?
We'll let the head teacher respond to that one, I think.
Okay, that's a very good question, Amy, actually. I think one distinction to make is perhaps for younger children, that's not so much the same. So for young children, they probably would start earlier in the morning. We have had preliminary discussions about whether school should start late, and certainly in some schools around the country, they've had a later start and a later finish. It is quite complex, and the biggest thing, I think, that's the disadvantage is that as a single school, if we finish late, I think we wouldn't be able to have any meaningful fixtures after school or any meaningful enrichment after school. If lessons went on till 5 o'clock, we'd have to be taking people out of lessons all the time for sports fixtures or any type of enrichment. And we feel that's a really important part of life at school, and we want to retain that. So that's one of the main reasons against it. If all schools went in the same direction, then probably that would be a lot easier. But as a single school, I think you'd make it very difficult for students who'd have to miss a lot of school if they wanted to do any enrichment.
Could I comment?
Of course. Okay.
The point you raise is a very valid one, but it is up to the schools as academies to decide their future on these kind of issues. They're not something the local authority should get involved in. Where we have an involvement is with a school building programme and extensions, where a number of primary schools in Torbay are growing rapidly. But on the issue of health, it is a team effort that will respond to that in the best form. Not just academies, the local authority. We have our own health and wellbeing board, which involves all the professionals working together for you to keep you fit and healthy and for a better tomorrow. And I believe that this is the way forward. You have some new developments with CAMHS, which is Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, where you have 6 hubs in Torbay, which are set up. It's a new development where everybody works together, not only just but health, education. We have a responsibility in that, and the budget is ring-fenced for health. It's new responsibility from government. And we feel that the quick reaction of new organisations of this nature, which are established in the schools throughout the Bay, is best for mental health services. We also see the role of the newly formed Culture Board, Sports Strategy, where prevention is a major part in this issue. If we can prevent illness at a very early stage, we have many programs that are here to help you and support you, but it has to be a team effort between your academies, between the local authority, between the health service, and that's where I see the future, prevention And then those that become unwell, mental illness is something you recover from with help and support, and I believe we have a very good chance of helping you here in Torbay in the future.
Yeah, I, in fact, I'm a psychologist, although I haven't worked in psychology for quite a long time. I've been involved in something called the recovery movement in mental health, which really was started in Australia and New Zealand, where it was felt that the best people to support people who are going through some sort of mental distress are other people who've had that experience. And instead of professionals spending a lot of time doing lots of diagnostics, which is where most of the energy has been in Western medicine, that there's sort of grew to be a movement called this recovery movement, and now that's been accepted by the Department of Health, something that's mainstream.
What is there to connect all of this together for an all-round service with all these groups? Because I've known many people who have struggled to have, because of the lack of communication between these different help groups and different supports there is. What are you planning on doing to improve the communication?
So as Youth Parliament, we're about to start work on a new project where we're going to be collating the different charities and different organisations that we have out there, and hopefully get it together in one piece of media. We're not too sure on what yet. I mean, I personally don't particularly like leaflets because they're not that effective. But we're thinking of getting something together where we can actually have all the different help groups and such like in one place that we can easily contact them if we actually need them. That's one way that I think we will be doing that in the next couple of months as one of our new projects.
Could I comment further? May I comment further?
Of course.
I meet from time to time with the Youth Parliament at Parkfield and looked at the various issues that arise from those meetings and the discussions. One was, of course, on bus transport and the cost of that. I arranged a meeting with Stagecoach. The managing director, Mike Watson, came along and talked to you.
Absolutely.
And so he could understand some of the problems that youngsters have in transport. That enabled him to make an offer, the first in the UK, to reduce some of their charges, and that is still an ongoing project. I hope that will continue because there are changes being made all the time, and on transport terms like that, we need to tell you, and they need to tell you, what is actually happening. So I look forward to further meetings with the Youth Parliament. I think it's an excellent organisation. You go through a democratic process with your elections each year, and I found it educational for me, but I hope that those will continue, and I ask you to support what they do because I think it's a brilliant organisation and there's much more that could be achieved by it.
So we have to move on to our third topic. We might come back here later on if you've got some other topics to talk about. So go over to Curriculum for Life.
So nowadays adolescents aren't educated in skills they need for the future. Young people attending university or leaving home struggle to budget their money. First-time buyers don't have a clue on how to get a loan or mortgage. The Curriculum for Life campaign has gained a huge national interest about how to pay for mortgage and all of those things that students are desperate to learn. How can we teach the youth of today these essential skills? We've got a vox pop sorted about when we ask people questions about the topic.
You for the real world?
No, I don't, because we don't really learn about like taxes and stuff like that and rent and all the stuff you need for the real world. No, I don't think they do, no.
No, I do not. I think we spend, during water at school, we spend our whole time sat behind a desk learning stuff which we won't necessarily apply in real life. And I think volunteering and work experience is probably the good thing to do.
Well, kind of, because you can like learn to read and write and count and things at schools, but in other ways they don't, because it's not like, I suppose you do learn social skills with your friends, but I don't think they do completely.
No, absolutely not. Because schools don't teach us how to pay bills, they don't teach us how to get checked into hospitals, they don't teach us about things like sexuality or gender, they don't, it's not, They only teach us things like English and maths, which, quite frankly, unless you're going for that very specific career in English or maths or whatever, won't help us.
Educationally, they have. I mean, I know we've been taught the ways to go onto university and higher education, but I think as an individual adult, like living on your own, having your own jobs, managing your own money, I don't think there's enough of that in the Torbay at the moment.
Kind of, yes, because if you had kind of a job and you have a good life, then they teach you all the math skills and English. But if you were in trouble and danger, they wouldn't.
Two very straightforward suggestions about how we can help. One, get rid of Ofsted. While there's Ofsted who only measure student outcomes in terms of academic achievement, of course schools are going to concentrate on that, so get rid of Ofsted. Secondly, get rid of league tables. If you got rid of league tables, and league tables only measure your academic outcomes, if you got rid of those, overnight schools could start to concentrate more on the important things, many of which you've just mentioned. I think the academic is clearly important, but if professional people, i.e. teachers in schools, were allowed to concentrate on what was important rather than just academic examination results, then that would be a massive benefit. So get rid of Ofsted, get rid of league tables, and it would change overnight.
Maybe the government would like to respond to that.
Perhaps one for me to respond to. I must say I can't see, they see league tables been altered or changed, I must say I can't see them disappearing, because fundamentally people, when they are choosing, looking at schools and choosing what to do, it is one of the things they do look at. And ultimately we are in a global race around skills and around future employment that we do need to, as a country, be able to compete. We look at the emerging economies, particularly like China and India, who are skilling up their students, who will ultimately be competing for exactly the same jobs that you're going to want to be going
for. They don't have
well.
League tables.
So they will come along. But I say India until recently didn't have primary education, but you'll find that certainly China is skilling up and moving on. Anyway, in terms of looking at how we do curriculum for life, it is about factoring in. It's also actually not just at school age as well. One of the things that I think has been quite illuminative for a lot of people is this year, when you do your tax return, you actually find out how much of your taxes have been spent on particular areas, which has also helped, I think, give people an idea of, for example, how the government spends its money. So, for example, most people wouldn't know that for every 1,400 quid of your tax that's spent on the health service, only £85 is spent on international aid. Now, if you contrast that with some of the media coverage you see of those two subjects, you'd think that not much was being spent on one and quite a lot's been spent on the other. But the actual reality is dramatically different. And to give the other thing, if for every 1,400 quid on the health service, £1,800 is spent on welfare. So again, puts those into perspective. In terms of looking at things like, you know, purchasing a home, it is about helping people understand the decision taken. Also, things like APR as well, which it's very easy, certainly we start to clamp down on the payday lenders, but those magic numbers that used to be at the bottom in the thousands of percent that people just sort of skid over, but it's only when you realise the impact that can actually have, if certainly when loans have been allowed to roll over, and actually then explain to people that what looked like a very small amount for a loan, once it's defaulted on, become a dramatic amount of money being paid back compared to what's been lent. Again, that shows perhaps the hole there's been in life skills education.
So should we just let just to respond to this, and we are still on the topic of curriculum for life. So yeah,
just quickly in terms of how broadening the curricula, if we were in a different world. I think one of the things that would be really useful is something around making sense of the world. I think there's something about skills and knowing about money and all that sort of stuff. But one of the reasons that people find politics so confusing is that it comes around, you get elections every 4 or 5 years, and then suddenly everybody's very confused about what's going on. And there's a real yearning for people, as they get slightly older, for being able to have conversations about how do we make sense of this. But I completely agree with your head's view that one of the most damaging things in terms of education, but also lots of other services, are very, very narrow ways of measuring what's successful and what isn't. And the other effects of individual targets, league tables, there are ways of doing assessment of whether things are functioning well for the people involved, which actually Scandinavian countries managed to do without having such narrow micromanagement in terms of performance. And every service is suffering from this, and it is getting worse year on, because we're driven by an accountancy culture. And if we don't reintroduce social values, relationships and social impact back into the way that we do assessment, whatever level that we're doing it at, we're just going to drive people into the ground, which is a real shame, because we have this almost like we have two things happening in services. We have lots of really good ideas that have been accepted. They're much more person-centred, etc., etc. And then the reality is of all staff, whether they work in prisons or in schools or in the health service or in local government, being monitored the whole time on whether or not they've given you the right book to read or whether they've filled in the right form. And droves of people are leaving the services because of that fact. In other words, they're retiring at 55 when actually they're quite experienced.
Do you want me to comment?
Do you want to ask the audience?
Have we got any questions from the audience? Oh, we got a lot. Oh, Sam, do you want to decide?
Oh, the fastest hand. Otis, do you want to just go to the girl at the front on the second row? That's very rapid.
Well, I just want to start. Like, I don't understand what half of those words you said mean, and I think, and that's exactly why you need to be like implementing more of like ways that we can learn about APR, the magic number 7. I don't know what that means, and I didn't quite understand how you're going to be doing that, to be quite frank.
Thank you very much. We'll just let Sue respond to that.
I just want to respond to that because it's a very important question, and that's why people are always amazed when things fail in care homes, not in schools, and in prisons again, and in the health service. And often it's because people are working in a way where they are paid and reinforced by their managers for doing very, very particular tasks, and then they're not listening to, say, when somebody's an old person wants them to sit longer in their front room. So what we're talking about is most people actually are quite cowed at work, however brave they sound out of it, and they tend to be, you know, they do what they're paid for because they're worried about losing their jobs. And actually, when we talk about whistleblowers are usually the people who are brave and who do exactly what you're talking about. But it is getting harder and harder because the system that your head works within, it's not just a question of how he behaves. He has to fill in all sorts of bits of paper to keep the money flowing into the school, and that's what we're talking about.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Just follow up as well. It's hopefully, Celeste, you'll know that, you know, much of Ofsted we do ignore. This is a live radio broadcast, so be careful there. So we do put, you know, but it is hard when you are judged in a certain way, and has just been said, a positive judgment by Ofsted or in league tables will often lead to extra funding, which will lead to better opportunities for you. We've got a new building about to happen, a new science lab, a new music room. We've just been granted £450,000 for that. We wouldn't have got it unless we were an outstanding school. So we try and keep that outstanding rating, and we try and keep the school high in the league tables because it will benefit you ultimately. But we also try and ignore much of the things that probably aren't to your benefit. So we try and get the balance right. Don't always get it right, as you do tell me often, but we do try and keep you as the students at the centre. So.
Is it okay if we get another question from the floor, please? Yes, and okay, yeah, just give it that, it's fine.
I agree with Chalessa. I think it's really important. Yeah, and I also think it's really important to know about taxes and about learning about stuff that would affect you later on in life, but also, I was wondering if any parties would improve equality education, because that's something that, I haven't been taught about during school in the past, but something that many people just have to pick up by themselves, which sometimes people don't learn that kind of thing from their parents. And I think that if you're going to do well later on in life, you have to be able to appreciate people and treat, and regardless of sex or race.
Okay. I still remain very optimistic about your futures for jobs here in Torbay and South Devon. The point you make is a very valid one. I'm not going to move into the Ofsted argument. I'm going to look at the curriculum as it stands and what changes you would like to see. Do you get an opportunity to question your curriculum, certain parts of it. Do you need to change it? Do you need to add things into it? You mentioned, I've got here, expert and unbiased careers and education advice. Opportunity to practice and help with CV writing. Do we need to make adjustments to give you an opportunity apply for jobs and apply for them successfully? So I just pose the question, is there an opportunity within the schools in Torbay to add additional things into the curriculum, financial advice and leadership on that score as part of readiness for the real world, I think is absolutely essential. So I'd like to see those opportunities given to you and for you to have a chance to say what you would like to do. The future here, I think, is very good. I do see, if we carry on as we are, a shortage of jobs, not of job opportunities. You look at the future of this country, by 2019 to 2050, we could be the leading country in Europe. We have a much younger population coming through. All the schools at primary level are substantially growing. The program for the next few years is probably 100 million. So I'm optimistic about your future, but we have to listen to you and understand what you require to achieve that. And that's where I'm here, to listen to what you'd like to have in your curriculum, the changes that you want to take place, so we can guide you and help you. Financial matters are very important, and I think there needs to be guidance on that. It's an organisation called Personal Finance Education Group, a charity focused on helping young people with money management. We need more of that. Don't forget there are 600 voluntary organisations in Torbay. Many of them can give you help and guidance, and a lot of people with experience there to help you. So I'm optimistic about the future, but come and talk to us about what you would like to do.
And directly from your question, you can ask Nell, you can ask Freddie, and by telling us what you want in being a more gender equality education and stuff like that, we can get it all together and then ask these people. As they're willing to come along, they are willing to listen to us, and hopefully they're willing to actually make a change, and maybe we can actually get somewhere and maybe actually do what we've actually set out to do. So can we have one more question? We are running out of time. So just at the front row there, that's right.
Just to agree with what some of the other people have said, I think if the pressure was taken off exams and exam results, that could affect, you know, more balanced curriculum as well as mental health, because a lot of the stress I feel is from exams. So maybe it could solve more than one problem.
And again, just to answer that, totally agree, Katie. I think the overemphasis upon examination outcomes is leading to a skewed and, I think, ineffective educational system at times, in that you don't get as broad an education probably as you deserve. Secondly, it puts you under huge pressure. The reality is, you know, you feel under pressure because exam results you feel you're going to need for the job market, and you feel under pressure because of that. If there was less emphasis on exam results, because we all know there's certain students who leave here with fantastic exam results, but we know in life actually they're not going to be great successes, and there are others who perhaps exam results aren't as good, and we know they're going to be fantastic successes because they actually have the skills, the personal attributes, which are going to make the difference in life, and that's why we try and have quite a lot of enrichment at school, things like the Duke of Edinburgh, things like being involved in music or drama. All of those things are really, really important. They don't get measured because they can't be measured, and I think we should get to a system where we make important what we can measure. That's all we make important. And if you can't measure it, it doesn't mean it's not important. I want to get away from just only measuring things that are measurable. So I totally agree.
Wonderful. I guess we could always have one more question if anybody is still... So there's so many questions.
You're talking about programmes being available in Torbay on things like... paying taxes and things like that. Actually, how will that actually affect Torbay as the small community of Torbay for the young people in the next few years? Are there any programmes in place in the next few years to address the issue of teaching these essential skills?
Can I say, one of the interesting things that a woman called Alexis Bowater is setting up are some workshops on the beach in the summer called Teach on the Beach, which are basically going to be discussions, different age groups, which should be quite interesting, and where it will be possible to raise all sorts of things that are not inside, you know, the school, not within the school year. And I think more of those sorts of things are going to start happening. Again, in the end, it does depend it needs some investment into more creative discussions outside of schools as well, I think, which I think the arts sector are quite aware of the need, really, to involve young people much more, not just in the production of, you know, drama in itself, but actually bringing young people together to talk about what they want to talk about.
So I think we must end.
Okay, thank you very much for listening, and thank you for the panellists. Should we give them a round of applause? So thank you very much, and thank you for coming along, and I hope that you help understand some of the issues in Torbay and some of the things involved with the Youth Parliament. Yeah, and any more future broadcasts will be on Parkford Extreme Radio. So thank you very much, and yeah, enjoy your day. Yeah. Thank you.
Actually, Freddie, before we finish, can I just thank those involved in the Youth Parliament? It's a huge undertaking, and they're young people who have organised this. It hasn't been organised by adults at all. So for young people to organise an event like this on your behalf, I think it's fantastic. So I think we ought to give our applause, please, to the young people who have organised this.